You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Chris Lopez, and I'm a realtor over at Your Castle Real Estate. And today we are doing a presentation on, so you have an investment property and you tenants, now what? This is about knowing your responsibilities as a landlord to help you keep you out of court. So I've got back Anne-Marie Sunday, who's a property manager here in Denver. She's been on a few webinars and podcasts with us in the past. So I wanted to come back and have her do another webinar with us. So Anne-Marie, welcome back.
Thank you.
So we are going to jump into this. And actually, as we get going, could someone let me know you can see the slides and hear us? Just type in the chat box that everything is good to go. And as we are going through this presentation, thank you, Nate. And as we go through this presentation, feel free to ask questions. Don't wait to the end. We like interaction. We like questions. It's more fun for you and it's more fun for us. So going into this first slide, Anne-Marie, I want you to just take it away from here and tell us what we need to know.
Yeah. So, hey, I have been encountering many folks, and the reason for this kind of discussion that we decided to have today was you're an investor and you own a property, or maybe you're about to close on one. And I find a lot of folks think or believe that all the expenses that can occur on a property would go on a reconcile for on a security deposit towards a tenant. And I would have to say, and what we encourage most of our investors is you need to be able to expect some of the profit that you have made over the year lease or whenever that tenant is going to turn, moves out and a new one moves in. Some of your profit needs to be invested back into your property. It is a house. Most of us live in them. We all know that they're maintenance creatures and you need to be able to perform the necessary maintenance items to keep us out of court. Excuse me. I think one of the things that I'm going to draw your attention to, it is on my website. If you don't know, it's about a 5-page, maybe 4-page document, the Colorado Warranty of Habitability. My website's in the lower right-hand corner of the screen. I would encourage you to print this out. Our lease and everyone should be following the habitability law as the crutch first for everything that's based on, because I guarantee you, your tenants know the habitability laws. So the reason I bring this to your attention, I just recently reread the entire habitability law and it's actually not boring reading. I think people misunderstand a little bit about what their responsibilities are as owners. We all know that if the heat or the furnace goes out in Colorado, especially right now, we need to respond, right? That's a habitability issue for a home. If they don't have water, that's an issue. If they don't have electricity, that's an issue. The last three things, I think, are where owners sometimes question, is it their responsibility? And it is literally stated in the habitability law that it is your responsibility. So let's talk about security. I don't mean security from a standpoint of you have to have an alarm system, but I have many properties, homes that have bars, the little wooden dowels in the windows, because the windows don't lock. That's a habitability issue, you guys. That is a problem. So if a tenant wanted to be sneaky and they are there, they could report you as a violation of the Colorado Warranty of Habitability because they can't lock their windows. And I understand the rod is there. It's still not a secured window.
But by law, it has to actually have that latch on there that locks
yes.
it.
Yes. Yes. Rodent free. This is a big topic. And I will, let me just tell you about rodents, bugs, pests. It is in our lease that the way it's stated is when you turn over a property, it needs to be rodent and pest free. Okay. Because people come to me and say, well, we can't control if they're slobs and they're living with, you know, crackers out on the counter and we've got a trail of ants or we've got little mice going in. I get that. But when we turn it over to them, it needs to be rodent and pest free so that we have a, what I always talk about, I think I've said this many times, clean slate. So you have a clean slate. The property's a clean slate. If something then transpires once the tenant is there, then yeah, it makes sense for them to have to pay for the service of getting rid of the rodents or whatever it is that they're trying to get. And then of course, trash free. That's I think that's pretty self-explanatory. I would have a question of, and I oftentimes when I'm conversing, people ask, what about air conditioning? So in this part of the world, we have plenty of homes here that do not have air condition. So that is not part of the habitability law. And I will tell you, tenants think that they are going to die without an AC working. And most of them will freeze their coils at the beginning of, on the onset of summer when we're hitting 95 and they ask their air conditioner to go down to 68, they freeze their coils. And we teach them about how air conditioners are sized. But in this part of the country, it is not something where you have to be trigger sensitive and get somebody out there immediately.
So I'm curious, when the tenants freeze the coils, are you just diagnosing over the phone with them, or do you actually have to send out a serviceman to go out there and look at it?
No, I know what they've done.
Okay.
Most of the time.
So you just coach it to them over the phone?
So I tell them, you've probably froze your coils. Now you get to live with it without your AC for 24 hours. You're going to turn it off and you're going to turn your fan on and you're going to run it for 24 hours. And then let me know if it's not working tomorrow when you kick it back on. And you're not allowed to go to 68. We ask our tenants not to go below 75 on their air conditioners. It's a whole design system that they've designed it. We're at altitude, and the way they design air conditioners in Colorado, it's a 20% overage. So they're not designed to do that shift. Mm-hmm.
And do you actually put that in the lease about the temperature setting in there?
Or is
that
just let me coach them afterwards? It's on the move-in in their documents, and they sign the move-in sheet.
Okay.
So they know how to operate their air conditioner, because not every property has an AC.
So even if someone bitches and moans about it that, oh, I want to put it to 68, but the coals keep freezing, they don't have a right to go under the law to get that fixed. That's just, we'll live with it or deal with it?
Correct.
Okay.
And I will tell you, there are plenty of people. Now let's talk about a little bit, you know, we can give some examples. You know, this is all about keeping you out of court, because I have been in court. Some examples of questions, you know, in my lease, it states that if you have an ice maker, that in our lease is considered a luxury. I think I probably talked about this in the 411 webinar we did. But let's just rehash that for a minute. If you have an ice maker, in our lease, it's considered a luxury. So yes, Mr. Tenant, you may use that ice maker, but if it goes out, the owner reserves the right to cap the line and not repair, because usually the ice maker is the first thing to go out in a refrigerator, and it can cost them quite a bit of money to repair. I've seen even so much as it would have been just cheaper for them to buy a new refrigerator without the ice maker, quite frankly. So what we do is, now an ice maker is one thing. If you have a washing machine, I have owners that say, do I have to repair washing machines? So the underlying thought process is, owners say, well, I'm going to put a washing machine there. It's an older one. It's an as is. I'm not going to repair it. But one rents a property with the idea that it's in working order. So you can't necessarily, this as is, in quotes, I use it because honestly, there's really no such thing as an as is. Even a for sale house is never as is. You can ask for things on an inspection or whatever. It's the same with a leased property, and you need to be conscientious about keeping all of the appliances in rent ready, operating, performing capacity. And to be very honest with you, you really don't want usually if a washer breaks, it's full of water. And at some point that's going to leak out and it's in your house. That is not my idea of as is. That is not something that it was in my rental, it would not be happening.
So if I come to you with house around town and I say, I got this, you know, washing machine or a washer and dryer in here, it's been here for, 15 years or whatever. I'll leave it there because, hey, the tenants can use it. If it breaks, they can just start using the laundromat. What would you say back to me?
So in my attorney's view of that is you rented it with a washer and dryer. So you need to have a washer and dryer.
How is that different from an ice maker?
Well, the ice maker is intact in the entire refrigerator. So you now it's impacting an entire appliance. So that one component, and you can make ice and you can buy ice. But a washing machine, and yes, there are some tenants that say, and I will tell you, most 90% of my owners will repair an ice maker and we move on, or they buy a new refrigerator and then they don't buy it with the ice maker.
Does anyone just buy like the plastic cube trays?
Yeah.
Because that's what I use for all my life when I was renting.
Yeah. And we put them in their move-in packets and a lot of them ask, what are these for? I'm like, oh, well, you're going to find out.
YouTube it, right?
Yeah. I should put a DIY how to make ice on my website.
Oh my gosh. If that comes to that point. Okay. So that's actually what your attorney has told you, since that's a standalone unit.
Yeah. So the idea is, and we don't really want, any appliance to not be operable in its entirety, especially an ice maker. The intent is that line is capped because an ice maker can create a whole lot of damage, just like a full washing machine. So we don't want that to happen. That has happened in a property. They didn't tell us the ice maker line is leaking. It cupped the hardwood floors. And before you know it, we've got a real issue on our hands. So water, again, always a problem in a leased property. I'm not saying not to repair your ice maker, but I'm saying that there are differences between the two. If you go in with a operable washer and dryer and they break, I would say to you, if you're going to lease a property with a 15-year-old washer and dryer, you're probably at the end of the life for those two things, then don't rent it with them.
So just either remove it or buy a new one.
Yeah, just take them out. Well, I do have owners that don't provide the washer and dryer. And most of the time we will advise on that. You know, do you want a tenant trying to manhandle a washing machine down a small corner of a house and risk banging up walls? Because that could likely happen. Or is it a washer and dryer that's right off the garage and easy to get in and out of? Then don't provide it. You know, nobody says you have to provide it. Now, a refrigerator, someone's going to say, do I have to provide a refrigerator? The answer to that is no, but your pool of people, if they have to go buy a refrigerator for a rental, is probably going to shrink.
Mm.
Nobody wants to go buy it. But a lot of people travel, especially in our market and single family homes, they all think that their washer and dryer is the bomb and they bring them with. So having a not having a washer and dryer in a house is not necessarily a crisis.
So Matt says, our lease says appliances are not included in case the washer breaks down.
So are you doing something like, let me ask you this, Matt, are you doing something like a master lease option where the appliances are there and they can use them, but you're not going to repair them? And while you answer that question online, I think another safety and liability that everyone should make sure that they know about are smoke detectors, CO2 monitors. And by the way, CO2 monitors really should be plugged in. You know, CO2 exists lower to the ground, not high up where the smoke detectors are. So those combo units up on the ceiling aren't as efficient as a CO2 monitor down plugged in by bedrooms. And then also we are installing or placing fire extinguishers, small ones underneath the sink in the kitchen for all properties starting in 2019.
Why is that?
It's just it's another safety issue. And it's a small fire on the stovetop. It's not meant to put out an entire thing, but it's just being more progressive of having things available, being proactive to have things available for our tenants. I got to tell you, some tenants don't even know how to pull a pin and take a fire extinguisher, you know, and know how to use it. But we're just trying to provide liability issues for tenants.
Okay.
Did Matt answer our question?
Yeah, Matt responded, no master lease. It just states that there are tenants or that the tenants can use them, but they may not be reliable.
Okay, so I've seen that in a master lease option. That's why I asked you. That's an interesting scenario. And I would venture to say, you know, if it's working for you, okay. I would probably err towards something where it would be written more like, if there are appliances in the property, or the appliances in the property are not warranted and you may use them, but repairs would be on the tenant, something like that, if you're trying to take that out of your kind of realm or responsibility.
And how is a master lease differing from a normal lease?
Master lease is done more on, so the way a master lease would be I would, Chris, you come to me and you have a house that you want to rent. And I say, okay, well, I can offer you a master lease option. Master lease option is an option where I guarantee you, so I am your tenant. Me, my company is your tenant. And I guarantee you that every month, regardless if it's filled or not, you are going to get $2,000.
Okay.
And I am going to lease that property for $2,500. And I keep the swing, the $500. And you're not to have any headaches. The only responsibility you would have would be you have to carry the homeowner's insurance. So if there were structural issues, roof, something like that, that would be your liability. Everything else is placed on the tenant. And typically we set a maintenance issue of anything below $100 maintenance issue, tenant handles. Anything above, owner will consider as splitting or something like that.
But then you as a property manager, you're taking the risk where if it's not rented for a couple months, you're still paying me my $2,000 a month.
Correct. I only have two in my portfolio. And you know, they were really popular. Some people are, it's very popular, but I don't do them very often. But the reason I ask that about Matt is that is written in the master lease option leases with regard to appliances. I personally think that good working appliances, and you don't have to spend a fortune, but you want, so my opinion is I want to have really good tenants that are going to take care of my property. And I don't care what level of property you're renting. If you're renting from the 1500 all the way up to the 10,000, it doesn't matter. When you present a beautiful property and you can present $1,500 rentals as beautiful properties, people walk in with the mindset that I'm going to take, this is all new. This is nice. I'm going to take good care of it. Number one, they want their deposit back. Number two, it's a pride of this is their home. If you present something that is not really, hey, I don't really care. I don't want to take ownership of appliances, or I'm not going to paint the walls so there's scuff marks on it, I guarantee you're going to get it back worse. You will. It's subconsciously, they will not take care of your home. So that's my thought. And I think you battle more issues with that kind of clientele, to be honest. They are professional tenants.
And you were talking at the beginning of this slide about landlords trying to put all the expenses for tenant turnover under the security, or to, you know, keep out the security deposit. Like, what are some of those examples that they do and they shouldn't, or maybe in the gray area? Like, can you give some examples, like what's legitimate security deposit retention, yeah, what's not, and maybe what's in the gray area?
So I have a lot of homes that have hardwood floors. Hardwood floors will get scratched, whether you're living in it or someone else is living in it. It's inevitable, but gouging or true damage to the floor, you know, something that you drug a chair across and it just kind of laid a good old scratch in there. That's damage to the floor. That is able to be reconciled in a security deposit. I went to court for this. You know, we didn't end up refinishing the entire floor. I have a great gal that does my hardwoods, and she gave me an estimate for screening just that area. And it was a very reasonable, you can't charge them to do the entire floor again. But you know, the courts weighed in my favor of that was a justifiable charge. A lot of owners see nail holes and then they have to patch the nail holes, which I highly
from like hanging pictures.
And I highly recommend it. people need to live. They're going to hang pictures. You can't tell them. I mean, you can tell them not to hang pictures. It's pretty darn hard not to, but whatever. You know, listen, you can't, I don't charge nail holes and touch up paint. That's just not what I do. It's not worth the amount of money you're going to fight a tenant in court with to do that. Now, if they're hanging the big giant, the new TVs and you got those big, huge mounts, that's another story. That's a modification to the property. It's in our lease that we ask them and we tell them at the move-in. If you're going to do that, please ask for permission first. Most of them will do that. They'll hang those. And if we don't, if they don't ask for permission and they go ahead and do it, we'll find that on our property walk mid-year through. And we will tell them, this is something that if you're taking this bracket back down, you're not to repair it on your own. We will reconcile that on your deposit because that's drywall repair at that point. And that's fair.
Do tenants give you blowback for that?
No.
Or they understand?
No, they understand.
Do most actually take the mount or just leave it up? Because those mounts are $50, $80. They're not real expensive. I'm just curious.
No, tenants will take the mount. I always tell owners if I'm taking a property that an owner was living in it and has a mount there, I ask them, can you just leave that there and let the tenants, so then we don't have to deal with this every single time because it's a perfect spot for a television and let's try to use the mounts. So yeah, we try to, let's just have them there if they're already there.
I imagine most owners are probably good with that, right? Because they're not expensive. I mean,
they're not expensive.
It's more of a pain in the butt mounting and taking off the wall.
Yes. And it loses time in between the tenant turn. And then I put in here like lease expectations. I find that a lot of owners get sideways when they get, some owners either are non-responsive to their tenants, because they think, well, I didn't have a problem with that. Why would they be having a problem with it? And again, I can't stress enough, everybody lives differently. The other thing is that it's not timely. So I would encourage you when you get a maintenance request from your tenants to at least acknowledge that you have received whatever it is that they're sending. For us, they do everything electronically. And we let them know that we've received it. And depending on the request, if it's something we need to review with the owner, we'll let them know what we're talking. If it's something where we know we can pull the trigger, we'll let them know what contractor will be contacting them and scheduling an appointment to come and repair. But those are things that if you have those, so in our system, it tracks our communication with our tenants. So I can't stress that enough. If you guys are texting your tenants, I would encourage you to stop and do it via email. Texting is a really hard thing to keep track of. And what you're doing is you're taking screenshots of your phone and trying to present that in a court of law. It's not really loved by most judges, at least in my experience. But if you have an email trail, that's a good way to track your...
So email trails are better than text messaging trails.
Yeah. If we text, we only text through our software because then I can have a report which shows the conversation going on between property manager and tenant.
Okay.
Correct.
And I'm curious, kind of looping back around, I'm looking at the slides talking about like the heater and stuff. So I know that's, you know, a requirement to have, but if it breaks, say, you know, January, it's cold out, what's the requirement of the landlord for is, you know, turnaround time? Do they have to go provide some plug-in electric heaters? Like, what's the landlord to do if the heater breaks in the dead of winter and it's, you know, 10 degrees at night?
Oh, you're probably going to put them up in a hotel at that point.
Okay.
I mean, because you're not going to get a contractor out that fast. I have a fantastic HVAC contractor, but middle of the night, something like that. Most tenants are not going to realize that their heat isn't, it's just not kicking on until the early morning. This did happen. And my contractor actually got out that day and it wasn't a new furnace that was required, but it was the ignition and he got it repaired right away, but it was on a cold day. And so, most of them will bundle up and they'll be okay, but you can't, I would say to you that going days on end is probably not a great idea. They don't like that. I had a property that had a refrigerator go out And, you know, the owner bought a new refrigerator, but it was a week for delivery. According to the tenant, they lost food in the blowout of the refrigerator or freezer, the freezer side. And so they wanted compensation. Theoretically, because there was a spare refrigerator in the garage, one would not necessarily need to compensate for that food that was lost.
Wait, so there was like the second refrigerator in the garage plugged in and functioning?
Yeah.
And they couldn't use that?
Well, they did, but they didn't find the... So, you know, those are things that... Do you want to argue with a tenant that's been a good tenant? And create kind of that riff, or do you, sometimes I find that, and even in myself, it's like precedent. You just, that's not right. They could have used it. Why should I pay for anything? But $100 of food compared to fighting somebody out in court. It's not worth it. Can I just say it's not worth it?
So you're being pragmatic over being right.
Yeah. Oh. When I was recently in court over a security deposit dispute, this was a small claims court because they were self-representing. Okay. So we had our attorney and they were self-representing and we won the bulk of the security deposit. They were disputing $730 and they were disputing that. And it was a few items on there that they weren't happy about. They lost on every single item except for, and this is what kills me, Denver Water billed them and me. So they double billed. And because I didn't know that they were billing the tenant as well as me, I put it on the deposit. And in small claims court, I lost that $50. So because I lost $50, or even one penny I had to give back to them. In small claims court, you can't ask for attorney fees to be paid for.
So say those numbers again. So you won everything, but then you're being double billed.
Part of the $750 was a $50 water bill that I did not know. Denver Water was sending me the bill as well as the tenants. They never turned it off on them. I don't even know how, but it was a direct debit out of their account and they showed it up in court, proven that they had paid the water bill. So because of that, the judge awarded them, you need to pay them their $50 back.
And then therefore you couldn't recover your attorney's fees because they rewarded partial damages.
Right. To the tune of $600 attorney fees. So my owner was awarded about $100.
Yeah.
So was it worth the stress, the pain? I mean, my owner didn't go to court. I did it for her, but it's food for thought, right? Yeah. Do you really want to, is it worth it? I've heard way worse cases, people fighting with mold. Sometimes it's better for your sanity. And I'm not saying to roll over. We all know that sometimes, but it's a different thing. It's a business now. And the other thing that I have a lot of owners, because many of my owners are accidental landlords. They were the owner of the house, living in the house. They're getting moved out of the state and now they don't want to sell their place in Colorado. So they rent it. And there's personal attachment. There's emotional attachment to it. So those are the hardest. It's hard to hear that, well, I never had an issue. It's hard to hear it. So I get it, but... We try to advise and say, this might not be, we've been there, we'll do it for you, but you need to expect this. This could happen.
So we got a couple more questions rolling in here, Anne-Marie.
Yeah.
We've got a follow-up one for Matt saying, how do you deal with nagging tenants? I have a duplex where one of the tenants keeps complaining about the other tenant. Most of the complaints are ridiculous and frivolous.
Let them work it out themselves. You are not the referee. You are not their parent. It is not your responsibility. And really, if it's that bad, they can call the cops on each other. I won't deal with that. And honestly, if they're texting you incessantly, which is what tenants love to do, which is why I never give my phone number, my cell phone number out and all of that. This is why, Matt, you need a property manager. But... it is not your responsibility. And unless I would assume that you have something in your lease that states that they should not be, that there's something about quiet enjoyment. You know, usually in a multifamily, you've got something where you need to be nice to your neighbors and play good in the sandbox. So you could violate them both and say, knock it off. And it's between the two of you. I just don't even entertain it at the first step. Train your tenants to be respectful and draw your boundaries.
I like that. So Joe says, do you require tenants to have renter's insurance? And if so, minimal coverages?
Yes, yes, yes. Coverages, I'm assuming if you're talking in the state of Colorado, let's see, minimal coverage is $100,000 policy. That's what most renter's insurance. And can I just make a statement here? Renter's insurance, the insurance that we as investors and we as property managers care about is the liability. What they do in the property based on their own stupidity or people they have over. I do not care about their stuff. So in the olden days, renter's insurance covered their stuff.
Yeah.
It didn't cover somebody falling off the rail on the back porch. Okay. Liability insurance or burning the house down, liability insurance is what you're requesting. So there's two things. On a single family home, we now require a minimum of a $300,000 policy. And based on my properties, the ones that go up higher in rent, higher in value, I'm talking over a million, those are higher policies. In addition, all landlords should request the tenant to name you on the policy. So they name you. So for us, it's Legacy Property Management. They use our email, info@legacypmco. And if the tenants decide that they're going to be sneaky and save money because it's dirt cheap to get tenant insurance and cancel the policy, you're the first one that's notified that the policy's been canceled. And it is a lease requirement that they must have it.
And so for that $300,000 example, is that $300,000 liability that the tenants are carrying for their basically their own protection and your protection as well.
Right. And this is based on not in our portfolio, but our attorney just raised it to 300 because he actually was in court over a tenant falling asleep, literally burnt the house down with a cigarette, you know, smoldering cigarette, took the house out. And he said, it needs to be a $300,000 policy that will take care of the house.
So another question here, Mary says, going back to the warranty of habitability, say that three times fast. Does the tenant go to court to make rent payment or can they just stop paying rent?
You cannot stop paying rent. That's an eviction. That's the road to eviction, the yellow brick road. I don't even remember if we can call it up really quick.
You looking for the document?
Yeah.
It's on your website, right?
And yeah.
Tell me where to click on it. I'm going to show
it. It should be under the resources. Is it under, it might be under owner stuff. Oh, it's resources. Under tenants, under resources, and you can download it. So let me just look here. I don't know that.
Well, I pulled up on the screen that they're seeing too, so people can follow along.
Yeah, the habitability really talks about is the property go to tenants and then resources. Resources. Habitability is really talks about the house itself. It's not talking about their obligation of rent payment. So your lease needs to cover rent and, you know, what's happening with that. And so Mary, you're asking, they not only can't just stop paying rent, they cannot deduct anything from their rent because they think, well, I'm going to go fix this. And so, you know, you owe me this much money. They can't do that unless they have prior approval. And if you do that, my gosh, put it in writing. So does that answer your question, Mary? If they don't pay rent, that's an automatic start filing for eviction. And it's in the Colorado state, it's 3-day demand.
So Mary said, I had a tenant claim that her window would not lock and therefore doesn't have to pay. We started the eviction process.
So what I would have done is gotten the window fixed and she has no basis. If you're starting the eviction and the window still doesn't work, you could be in for an argument right there, especially if she disputes the eviction.
And I'm curious, like, how would that play out? Let's say there is a violation of the warranty of habitability. You start the eviction process. I mean, it goes to court. What happens?
Well, first of all, if there's an issue in the property, a tenant must allow, and it states in there, you got to be allowed to try to repair and fix. You know, in my lease, tenants are obligated to report issues in a timely manner. Now, if I lease out a property and I know the windows don't lock and somebody breaks in, I got problems. Okay. So owners, especially windows, we all know they're not the cheapest thing on the planet. And so why did I want to replace a window, let alone all of them? It's very, very risky for you to lease out with dowels being your reason. You got to be given the ample time to try to repair. So if it's something where she's saying that window wouldn't lock, especially if it's a ground floor window, you can get a window guy out there pretty darn quickly to at least secure the window with, even if you're not getting a whole new window, this just happened. You can at least buy the little locks with the pins that they put on the sliders, you know, and it's a second lock. For goodness sake, you could do that on a window so it's not a wooden dowel.
Right? And that would comply.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's a secured window at that point, at least in my mind. That's what would be. If a tenant is complaining about it and they're worried about their safety, I would take safety very seriously. So.
Moving my windows around here.
What else did I do?
So I think we're kind of not really following the slides too much here, which is fine. So keep the questions coming.
We kind of talked about this, but.
Yeah, so I think we already covered this slide on tenant turnover expectations, unless you want to talk about this or move on.
Well, I mean, there's only one more slide and it's just kind of a funny slide. But one thing that I will tell you, let me give you an example of people live differently. If you are what I call the accidental landlord, you owned a property and it became it while you were living there, and now all of a sudden it became a rental for whatever reason. I will give you an example of a very beautiful home here in Colorado that the owners lived there for 9 years. They moved out, and within the first week, the tenant took a bath in the master bath, and the bathtub didn't fall, but the whole water like let loose into the family room below. And the owner's like, how could this happen? It never happened when we were there. And my first question to them was, did you take a bath? And they said, no, they never took a bath in their tub because they're not bath takers. They're shower people. And the tenant is a bath person. So can I just say again, everybody lives differently, and you have to expect that. I mean, the people that say this house is perfect, there's nothing wrong with it, I guarantee you a tenant is going to find something. Okay. On the turn, let's see, when you're turning a property, you know, we talked about spending a little bit of money. This goes a long way when you, and I preach this over and over, but it goes a long way when you turn a property as a clean slate. If you can, try to have a standard color, try to just, you know, tenants will try to touch up walls, fill in nail holes. That's great. You know, we often will do a mental or a punch list when we're showing the property as the property is going to turn. And if there's quite a few things that need to be tended to, then we will start a lease one day later and have our crews ready on the move out so we can quickly get in there and make it, you know, spotless. You know, having it rightfully cleaned inside the drawers, inside the cabinets, makes all the difference.
So go into more detail on that, because let's just say a typical turn and not, you know, not just your average tenant that's, you know, good person, you know, there's wear and tear, nail holes, couple scuffs on the wall, just normal stuff. What does your clean slate turn look like? So it sounds like a deep clean.
It's an absolute deep clean. In our lease, we require that to happen by the tenant as well as professional. So professional tenant clean as well as carpet clean.
And the tenants pay for that.
And the tenants pay for that. And they have to submit receipts on their move out inspection. Many times they don't understand how to order, how to request a tenant turnover clean, because it's not dusting and vacuuming and, you know, cleaning the baseboards. It's opening every drawer, every cabinet and wiping it out. Think about if you were to move in and you pulled the drawer open in the bathroom and there was someone else's hair there. I mean, it would just, ugh, I've seen that. So a tenant's going to complain about that too. So we do that usually, not usually, maybe half the time. We'll have our cleaning crew on standby. And what we'll do is we'll tell the tenants, you did really well, but there's a couple of areas. It's almost always the bathrooms and the kitchen that need some touch up. So we're going to have our cleaning crew come through and do that, and we'll reconcile it on your deposit. You know, sometimes where the oven, the sides of the oven, you know, our cleaning crew will pull the oven out, clean the sides, lift up and clean underneath. I mean, it's just a really good clean, and it needs to smell like it's been cleaned.
Yeah.
Carpet cleaning is a must for sure. And it's also a good way for us to determine if we have damaged carpet or really spots that are not going to come clean.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, some of the other things that we typically do is mainly it's walls. So if there's a lot of scuffs on the wall, a few, you know, that's one thing, but you know, people are people and they back into walls or their chairs, depending on what the room is used for, bedrooms. So, you know, a nice clean, that's why having multiple colors in a house is always a challenge. If you can stay with one color throughout.
Do you have like a go-to color?
Right now it's been titanium gray, and it's okay. The bear paint because it's so in and people love the gray and it's not too dark. And then the white trim. And I always use eggshell as my sheen because if I can wipe it off first, I'm going to have my cleaning crew wipe first.
Yeah. So gray is definitely the in color.
Paint, please.
Yeah. Why is that? I mean, I know I used to paint, but explain to people the different sheens out there.
You cannot clean flat paint. You will be painting if you start to try to clean flat paint. Just one sheen of eggshell is not this high gloss semi thing going on. But it's just enough to allow, a cleaning crew to wipe the walls down, and it might save you a paint job for a tenant or two.
So questions and comments here coming from the audience. Matt, says you can buy a window lock at Home Depot for like $5.
Yes.
So that sounds like much cheaper and less headache than an eviction. Joe says, if you have a bad tenant whose lease you don't want to renew, does it have to be given via certified mail or can you just email them to let them know?
I would email and mail them a letter. Don't mail them certified. That's the one with the little green card that you're expecting something back.
Oh my gosh. Whenever I get a certified letter in the mail, it's
It's bad news. And here's the game tenants play. Never send your security deposits that way either, by the way. The way tenants play is I'm not going to open it because they see who it's from, you. So don't send it that way. What we do is a two-day confirmed delivery so I can track it. It's in one of those express mail two-day delivery.
Like the priority envelopes, just
priority
in the USPS?
Mail. Okay. Uh-huh. And I get a tracking number. I can see it was delivered. I print that off with our files. And that's how I send all return, you know, security deposits. I'm talking about refunding security deposits. You all know that in our lease and in this state, we allow 60 days to reconcile a deposit. Okay. If it's 61 days and the deposit is not in the tenant's hands, they can come back at us for treble damages, triple the security deposits. There are tenants out there that play this game. So if you send it certified and they are expecting a security deposit check back, then they don't open it. And now they claim they never received it. And you never got that little green card back. You got major issues on your hands. It's a game.
So you're saying don't send the certified because they expect it's bad news. So
or they
don't open
just,
it?
Or they want more money. So okay. If they don't open it or they reject it, a lot of them will reject it and it sits at the post office. This has happened. I haven't had to pay treble damages, but.
No, this is very interesting because I'm trying to think now through the process. But yeah, if you send priority mail.
If you could get $6,000 on a $2,000 security deposit back instead of $2,000, would you do that?
I mean, yeah. but not illegally like that.
It's not fair. Yeah. We're always trying to stay ahead. And so what we found is the 2-day priority is a great way for me to confirm that they have truly received it. Because I got to tell you, I've had more issues with the postal system. I mean, I've had lost security deposit checks in the mail. It's the most frustrating thing. So at least, and I'm going to tell you, even with a tracking number, sometimes it can get held up somewhere dumb, but at least you have the tracking number to start somewhere. But to answer your question, Joe, send an email that you're opting not to renew. Make sure you're following your lease. Most leases are 30. Ours is 60-day notice that we're opting not to renew. Our lease is automatically written that unless we state we're going to renew, it will, in case we don't get it out there, it will not renew. But I never, ever rely on that. I just make sure an email and a letter to them in the mail.
And I think you can correct me, but by law, it's 30 days unless you state in the lease otherwise, right?
So unless for security deposits.
For security deposits, right? So unless,
correct.
So if you're listening out there, don't assume you do 60 days, whatever, because you gotta make sure what you have written in the lease.
The max you can do is 60 in Colorado. Otherwise, it's a default of 30.
Okay.
But I'm talking about, he's talking about renewing tenants.
Yeah.
If your lease states, whatever your lease states, 30, 45, 60, ours is a 60-day notice for renewal. We tell them at 60 days. We are owners opting not to continue.
And you do that via
email and mail.
You do it both.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, what do you think of just off the wall questionnaire? Because for one of my properties, I just did like Venmo payments for a long time to get my rent payments, security deposit backs. What's your thought on those electronic payment systems? You know, the Venmos, the PayPals. Those.
Yeah, that's part of my leasing class. I mean, everybody does it, right?
Yeah.
You know, we take ACH transfer. They all pay on their portal in our system. So here's the thing about any kind of electronic system. If you are not aware that, let's say your rent is $2,000 and your tenant says, I can only pay $500, and he goes and puts it in through Venmo. You now have accepted that rent payment and you cannot evict for that month if he goes through the, okay? If you accept one penny that way, you can't evict for that month. That is the risk of online payment versus the old days where they'd bring you a wad of cash or a check. You could say, nope, come back when you have all the money and reject it, okay? So for us, if we have what we call bad actors, people that are either A, short paying, which we don't have, or B, not paying at all on our online system, or they're either getting non-sufficient funds, so they'll pay and it bounces, or they won't pay at all, they lose the privilege of being on the online system and then they have to do cashier's check to our office.
Okay.
Which I don't like because that's more headache for us, but...
So Matt disagrees with you here. He says you can evict when a partial payment is made.
Not according to my eviction attorney, but that's, I use an attorney. And once a portion of the rent is accepted, you can't, in at least in my experience. So if you've been able to, more power to you.
So another question coming in from Facebook here. Brian says, hi, I have heard of a landlord implementing a deductible, and that's in quotes, for repairs required on his property payable by his tenants. For example, the first $50 of any repairs are the obligation of the tenant. Mm-hmm. He claimed this reduces the erroneous maintenance calls and headaches. What are your thoughts regarding a policy of this nature?
I like it. I mean, I had that in my master lease options, but I like it. And you're right. Because if you have tenants that are going to be nuisance people and endlessly making those constant requests that are not necessary, getting them to have some skin in the game, which is what I call that. I don't have any problems with it. I like it.
So follow up a comment from Matt. He says, I use Hopkins, I can't, Schechter and Sulzer, the largest landlord attorney in the state.
Okay. I use Springman Braden. Other largest, and then the other one is Schechter. So, yep. I mean, if you can stay out of court, then that's cool. Yeah. I just, you know, evictions are never fun. That's the bottom line. You're dealing with a lot of people's emotions and that, so.
All right, everyone. Well, we are wrapping up or coming up on the hour, so let's start wrapping up. So put in last-minute questions here, last-minute comments. Looking through your notes here, Amory, any other bullet points that we need to touch on here before we wrap things up?
No, you know, I'm always open to dialogue, conversation. You know, you can book an appointment to have a 15, 30 minute conversation with me. You know, I found this 10 things property managers want their owners to know and have. And I think it's, you know, it's good. It not only should the tenants have insurance, but so should you. And I think most people do, but have that. Understand what fair wear and tear is. That's probably the hardest thing for owners, for us, especially when it used to be your home. Definitely have a buffer. I have it on all of my properties, my personal ones that I own.
Buffer, what is that?
A financial buffer. So, you know, if you're going to be vacant or if you're going to have a, you know, a brand new furnace that has to go in, you know, to the tune of $3,000 or $3,500, whatever that furnace is going to cost. You know, have that buffer because you're not going to see the rent payments covering that for right out of the gate.
So you're saying I bring my property to you. That's an hour lease agreement that you're holding on the buffer or
this is just a recommendation.
Okay. So holding reserves.
Yeah. Holding reserves. Okay. I mean, we do hold a $500 reserve on every property that is a kitty that belongs to the owners, but it allows us to pay our contractors. So we're not asking owners to pay anything, but, you know, having a little bit of a month or 2 months in reserve on your end helps with those unforeseen costs. Because again, it's a house and it requires maintenance. Some people live harder than others, though. I welcome the opportunity to be here and happy to answer questions.
Yeah, and I'll just say as we're wrapping up here, Kathleen says, great class. I appreciate your time and info. So thank you, Anne-Marie.
Thank you.
And I've had a couple clients work with Anne-Marie, and these are just, you know, investors looking to buy, you know, traditional rental properties. And I can say Anne-Marie's been great to work with. The clients, you know, we'll be checking out some properties on the MLS or go drive and check some out. They email over a list of, you know, 2, 3, or 4 properties with, hey, what are your thoughts in these areas? And she's been extremely helpful and provides some incredible feedback. So my recommendation, if you're a realtor out there with working with clients, I would definitely add Anne-Marie to your Rolodex. And also if you're an investor, I would definitely add her to your Rolodex as well, because she's been wonderful to work with. And I'm going to put you on the spot here, Anne-Marie. So you can, maybe hate me after we turn off the recording. But you had mentioned a book that you had published. And might be publishing again. Sounded very interesting. So what was the details of that so I don't butcher it?
Well, we did a pamphlet book for our owners last Christmas on memoirs of a property manager, because we can't make this stuff up. And we sent it as a Christmas gift to all of our owners. And it was developed by one of my long-term property managers and I. We just sat to the point of crying because, you know, it's unbelievable some of the stuff we see. And some of the stuff we encounter, whether we're showing a property, conversations we've had, there are pictures in the book because we couldn't do it justice without a picture. And we just published it as a little coffee table conversation, but my owners are asking if Volume 2 is coming. It's been very fun. So I have that. Yeah, it's not on my website, but it's just a funny thing that we had to unload some of our stories into.
Well, when you publish Volume 2, I'm saying when, not if. when you publish Volume 2, you got to let us know, because I'm sure I would like to read. I'm sure we got a lot of listeners out there would like to read it as well.
Sure.
A couple other questions for you here. And I'd actually be curious for the listeners out there. What other topics around property management do you want to learn about? How often would you like to have these, like, I'll say kind of informal kind of Q&As with the property manager as well, like once a month, once a quarter, because I enjoy them. I always learn from them. I'm sure a lot of people out there do as well. So if you guys got topics or frequency, put it in there. I always like to hear that from people. But we are, the week after Thanksgiving in November here. The market's definitely taking a little pause right now, a breath. What are your thoughts on the Denver market from a rental standpoint?
Well, single family homes are what is in need. That's nice single family homes, 3+ bedrooms.
Not two bedrooms?
Not two bedrooms.
I bring that up because before we hit recording, we were sharing some stories and she was yelling about not to get two bedrooms. So
two bedrooms are rough. And so are condos are rough. If you don't live in Colorado, we got cranes everywhere with beautiful apartment complexes that I've considered moving into because the amenities are fantastic. So the old condos, while they're cheaper to buy, they're tougher to rent. And the HOA fees are going up. It's just crazy. So we like single family homes. We can lease out a single family home. I'll tell you, a condo is going to sit every bit of 60 days on the market to lease. A single family home is sitting at about 30 to 45 days. We can typically get somebody settled into a home. And they are in demand. We have, you know, we are just coming off of, we're going into December. So the fall, typically it starts to slow down. And we've had our two largest leasing months in the company's
history. In October, November you did?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, out ridiculous amounts. So people are moving and right now it's not somebody moving from across Denver because they're settled for the year and their kids are in school. It's people being relocated for jobs into the state. I just placed 3 expats from 3 different countries into our properties, backed by company and all of that. So we have a lot of industry and a lot of people coming into town. So we are always looking for beautiful single family homes to represent.
Any particular areas or just anywhere around town you need them?
So the big areas are obviously our focus. Well, not our focus. We have a whole slew of from essentially Tech Center down to Castle Rock out to the west, Southwest Littleton and into Golden. Those rent very quickly and very well. But we do have some Cherry Creek houses in Denver proper if they're going to be downtown. I don't get a whole lot of interest in the north side. I mean, we do have a couple in Broomfield, but they're a slower rent. It just really depends on where the industry is. If Amazon was going to go up in Boulder or up in Louisville or wherever they're talking about, then maybe that would be a bigger play.
Yeah.
But right now they're not there.
Great.
Yeah.
All right.
So while you guys on the real estate side might be seeing kind of a plateau, we're still seeing the need for homes. And I think it's because there still isn't a whole lot to buy and people are moving in and they need a place to live. They don't want to sit in the hotels.
Yeah, because we've been focusing a lot on the market data the last couple of months. It's definitely longer days on market, a higher inventory than what we've normally seen, even taking into account seasonality. And it's been really interesting. So I was just kind of curious if you'd seen anything on the rental side. I have not seen data on that, but you've got your finger on that pulse of the market.
No, we're still renting houses. I mean, the stuff that's on our website is because either someone has decided to buy a house and they were leasing one of ours and they canceled contract, or it's new into the portfolio. It's not one of our properties that is cycled through.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And guys, I'll just reiterate because I know we've got lots of emails and data on here about the market and some people are, you know, talking about the market bubbling or exploding. And I don't know, but if you're a buyer or an investor, this is a great time to buy right now because we have gotten some really major seller concessions. I've joked in the past about listing agents actually like returning my phone calls, but in seriousness, like we're actually seeing better things on the inspection resolutions. We're seeing price reductions. They're actually getting a lot more negotiation power than we have, or other parts this year and even last fall. So if you're someone out there looking to buy, definitely, if this time works for you, definitely get on it. All right, everyone, thank you for coming out. I appreciate you watching and listening. And Anne-Marie, thank you again. We'll definitely have you back in the near future.
Thank you.